This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello everyone, how are we all doing? Come on in, sit on down. It's time for another live Q&A, this time on a Friday afternoon here in sunny old England. It's miserable, it's cold, it's grey, but I have some time spare. I have maybe like an hour, maybe 40 minutes to spare right now. And I have just had a members only live Q&A for a good 50 minutes where I shared a new song I'm working on. Got the lyrics here and the chords and everything. I've kind of written it all down, and I've been doing passes through the guitar, trying to do it in one sitting, singing and playing it, you know, and kind of mastering the rhythm and the transitions and everything else, and how I'm going to sing certain things and so forth. And I've come up with a rough demo, like a 2.5 minute demo song of the actual, you know, it's just an acoustic version of the entire song. And I just played that for the guys in the members only there. So if you are a member and you haven't realized yet, go over and check that out. And let me know what you think. That would be public eventually, whenever I get round to mastering the whole thing and finalizing it. But I'm just sharing with you guys some new music I've been working on. And it feels good. It feels good to be creative again. It feels good to get back into the process of making music, because it has been a long time. About 6 years since I last recorded a song, maybe longer. I think the last time I recorded a song was before I met my now wife, which had been 7 years ago, which is, time has flown, you know. And I think the last thing I recorded was New Age Hippie, which I play on the channel quite a lot, you know, when I'm looking for a transition of some kind, just to take a quick break and get some water. And hopefully we'll have a new one to start playing very, very soon. So yeah, go check it out. Let me know what you think if you are a member. It's not finished. It's a work in progress, but it's definitely something I've enjoyed making, and hopefully I should be making a lot more in the coming days, because I do have a decent setup now. I've got an interface for this where I can control the gain and the microphone. I've got I can listen to what I'm doing with my headphones as well now, without any delay, and it's actually quite a fun thing to have the ability to record music in such high quality, and I'm going to enjoy this as much as I possibly can and utilize it for as long as I possibly can before this thing breaks. So there's definitely some new music on the way, so keep your eyes out for that. I was actually thinking, like, how am I going to market this, if I do market this music in any way? People have asked me, is there a place they can download the songs I've got, like, and have them in some way? And I'm wondering maybe if I sell them as products on Patreon. I think you can do that. I think you can sell products on Patreon. Like, people could download things off there by paying like a one-off price. And I don't actually know what the best way to do. I just put them on Spotify? Would I get any revenue if I put them on Spotify? How does that even work? Do you need to get like millions of listens for it to even register as anything at all, to make it worth it? I have no idea. I am not in the music industry. I don't know how it operates today. Maybe if anyone who has any insights or wants to let me know how that works before I even attempt it, I'd appreciate the advice. I'm all ears, you know, because I really don't know. I really don't know. Badod13 got his comment removed. Let me guess, you're talking about clowns, but not Zionism. Who's the real clown? Badod, I know what you're talking about. I often talk about Zionism. Like, a lot. Like, I do. I subtly hint and mention it all the time as well, without being brazen and obvious about it. Because I don't want to get my channel taken down like that, because that's pretty much ban bait. Like, are you stupid? Are you dumb? Do you think I'm dumb? What is that? Is that supposed to be some kind of bait to get me to talk about it so I can be framed and have everything taken away? Like, come on, have some tact. Have some tact. Listen, the mass noticing is happening now, and it seems like, for some reason, everybody's suddenly allowed to talk about it, right? No one's getting the channels taken down, no videos are getting flagged anymore when you talk about that topic. And that has not been the case for the past decade. Trust me, I've been here for a decade. You're not supposed to talk about that. Not on this platform, anyway. You know, not unless you want to lose anything and everything that you hold valuable around you and have your entire livelihood taken away. But rest assured, I've been constantly hinting that those are a very important piece on the chessboard. A very important piece. So I don't know what you're talking about. Like, what are you even talking about? Like, would you come off just coming and making random false accusations like that, like it bears any weight to reality whatsoever? No, I talk about the Zionists in the whole agenda. They're there. They're a part of it. But yes, right now, I feel like it's a bit of a trap. I think they're letting as many people talk about it as possible so they can get all those people on a list, so then they know who is pro and against. And then they've got them all, haven't they? I feel like right now, though, it seems like we're more readily available and allowed to talk about them than it ever has been before. This might be the time where we should shut up. Part of me just like a gut feeling. Maybe something's going on here that doesn't quite seem right, you know? Like, oh, now suddenly they're just not censoring that thing anymore. Yeah, what are they up to? I don't believe in coincidences, as they say, you know. Call me a conspiracy theorist if you want. And by the way, the clowns, as you call the clowns, as people say, like in the derisive term, the Nephilim look like clowns work is a way of bringing the gospel to people. And it works, and I have countless emails and messages from people telling me it's brought them to a faith in Jesus Christ and helped explain their experiences in the spirit realm and demonic oppression and attack, and help them understand the weapons they can use to protect themselves, and help make sense of many experiences in dreams and nightmares and waking life visions and the rest of it that involve clown looking demons. That work is important. You can derisively mock it all you want as though it's not important because there's other things you should be talking about. But I do talk about that. But also, that does not mean I cannot also talk about this thing as well. Two things can be true at the same time, right? You know, you don't have to only be a one-trick pony and hark on about the same thing over and over again. But when you, you know, you write the book on the bloody subject, I think that gives me some kind of credence and allowance to talk about something quite a lot. I wrote the book on the thing. I created the concept. I'm going to talk about it here, so get over yourself. Right. Anyway, let's move on. Keep it classy, says No World Order. You get it. Who have we got? We've got Pepe Sylvia is here. We've got Space Mike. You won't get money on Spotify unless you have millions of listens. Yeah, exactly. What's the point? Maybe I'll sell the individual file for like a dollar or something on Patreon if you want to download the music and have it there to listen to on your own iPod or desktop or wherever people listen to their music these days that is devoid of streaming services. I don't really even know. Paul, Bandcamp and SoundCloud are a couple of platforms to check out for monetizing your work. Maybe. I do have SoundCloud, but it's done through advertising, isn't it? That's how they make their money. And I don't know. I'd rather just sell the songs. Maybe make CDs and just sell hard copy CDs. Do people even use CDs anymore? That's the problem. I can't even sell CDs anymore because no one has a CD player anymore. So it's harder and harder, isn't it, to make money as a musician this day and age, I suppose. Who cares? I probably won't even make money off it anyway. I'll probably just release it all to the public for free, like I do with everything. DistroKid for music distribution. Interesting. DistroKid. Never heard of it. Got invited to a synagogue the other day by Mormon missionaries. Any input from the chat or Paul? Seemed very spiritually loaded. That's Oh, the Mormon church is basically Freemasonry light. Many of the Mormon members don't know that that's what it is. It's just a kind of a bastardized copy of Freemason initiatory rites and rituals with a more heavily Christian veneer than a Kabbalah veneer, which you get through Freemasonry itself. But fundamentally, it all goes back to the synagogue of Satan. It all goes back to the veneration of the God of this world and of Lucifer. So it wouldn't surprise me if the missionaries of Mormons have seen the parallels between Judaism, Zionism, and the way the synagogue is structured compared to their own churches, because they are all carbon copies of copies of copies of copies of the same thing, just different cults for different castes and sways, like types of life and people and levels, you know. I'm hardly surprised. I mean, I had Heidi Love on the channel, who was like an ex-Mormon kind of coming out, and she laid it all out on my channel like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, just how much Mormonism is encoded with Freemasonry. Heavily Freemasonic encoded religion. Heavily. So yeah, I'm not surprised. Howdy from Mississippi, says Tamara Green. Howdy from Southwest Virginia, says Geocentric 2.0. I like that name. Clowns and the number 33 is everywhere in America. Paul, I heard because of mentioning the skin color or something like that. I'm not sure what you just said there, Sean O'Rain, but it sounds important to you. I'm sorry, I don't understand it. People are buying CDs again. Oh, good. We're back in business, boy. How long will that fad last? And are people going to start like, oh, people are buying cassettes again, but you'll be telling me, and it's going to get more and more retro and vintage as time goes on. Definitely, thanks for that input, Paul. They asked me if I knew about Mormonism. I told them probably more than they do. I've seen the video with Heidi. Yeah, exactly. That's the odd thing about these modern day cults, like Scientology and Mormonism. Which are kind of not the same thing. Obviously, they have different core belief systems, but they're relatively new and they are not what they claim to be surface level, you know. You find the members, like Jehovah's Witnesses as well, these type of things, like the members don't realize that it has a nefarious origin. They usually don't know. And it's kind of, they actually don't know much about their own religion as much as they like think they do. That tends to be the case. It's because usually they're born into it and they're raised in it, and they just believe what they were told by their parents, who believe what they were told by their parents and never really questioned it. Because often when you get these cult-like versions of religion, the community is so strong that, and there are such powerful benefits to being a part of the community, of the cult, that people often don't question it as, or the validity of it, because they don't want to lose the benefits, or they think, well, it creates such a rich, powerful environment of wealth. Why, how could this possibly be a bad thing? You know, and clearly we're being blessed by God or the gods or the aliens from Zeta Reticuli or whatever cult you're a part of, you know. So yeah, often they don't know. They just don't know. Yeah, cassettes are a thing again. Okay, so I was right. Okay, fair enough. Ugh. God, those things are the worst. You remember getting the pencil to read?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Wind them, like you stick it in the thing. Just try and stop it from being knotted so you can get all the things back into place. Yeah, I remember that. You remember having to like record live to get things on the cassettes as well. Oh, good times. Good times. And then very quickly it became about portable CD players. You remember those? And, you know, if they got knocked, the song would skip. And then suddenly you had these ones that are like shockproof, so you could knock them and the song wouldn't skip. That was a revolution in music, wasn't it? Yeah, I'm getting nostalgic. That's a dangerous place to be. Let's move on. You mean you haven't seen the booming 8-track tape revival? I'm afraid not. Vinyl, yeah. And vinyl's always had its niche. I mean, I used to have a collection of vinyls. I got rid of them. About a year ago, just for space reasons. I just did not have the room or a record player anymore. And yeah, I kind of regret it. I probably shouldn't have done that. But at the time, in the tiny house we were in, we really needed every ounce of shelf space we could get. And horrible sacrifices were made, unfortunately. And it was just time to free up that shelf and get rid of all those vinyls, because they were just taking up too much space that we needed for baby stuff. And no storage to put them anywhere. It's sad, but I get the appeal. I understand the appeal. The audio quality is terrible, though. For nostalgia purposes aside and novelty aside, it's a bit of a faff, and the sound quality isn't that great. You know, as much as people like to argue it is, and you can hear the tones better, or the crackle is something like heartwarming, whatever. I'm just not into it. I wasn't obsessed. You know, it wasn't a thing for me. We need to bring back VHS. Maybe. VHS was cool. I remember I had the entire Red Dwarf collection on VHS, all 8 seasons. I was very excited about getting that on eBay back in the day. I remember that's where I got it from. Look at me getting nostalgic on it. It's the coffee. It's the winter vibes. It's the nostalgia feeling. This is what it is. It's the afternoon conversation, you know. I don't often do a live show on a Friday afternoon. But yeah, guys, any questions, anything anyone wants to ask, you can ask me anything. I'm here. I'm here for you. I was just talking in the members only stream about the aftermath to that whole conformity gate thing with Stranger Things. And someone sent me a snarky comment saying, "You still have a subscription to Netflix, to slop flicks?" You know what I mean? I'm like, no, I don't actually. It expired now. But I would hardly call getting it for 1 month to watch a series after like 3 years a subscription unnecessarily. But yeah, we did get it to watch Stranger Things, because I was invested in the stories. Like I've been watching it since it was a thing, And we haven't had Netflix in a very long time because it's just crap. And there's nothing other we want to watch and it's useless. I don't even watch TV. Yeah, the thing's never on, you know what I mean? So it's pointless. But we got it for that. And I was my inquisitive curiosity gets the better of me sometimes. And it's like, well, what are they hiding in this now? What's the latest propaganda that they're putting in this stuff? And the show itself wasn't actually heavily laden with much I could think of that was like showing hidden signs and symbols and numbers about the hidden hand of reality, you know. Sure, there's a lot of talk about as above, so below, occult principles, the upside down, demons and stuff like that. But really, it was more just like a nostalgic riff on like Stephen King novels and things like this, like It, you know, and the place of the dead lights. And like, it was more of that kind of vibe, you know, that it wasn't actually that occult coded. Really, you know, not much that really meant anything anyway, or no predictive programming was in there that I could see or anything like this. It seemed more like an energy hole, like an attention grabber and a nostalgia trap in order to keep people obsessing over something that means nothing for a little bit. It's bread and circus stuff, it felt more like. And I feel like media today is becoming more and more like the circus. And I feel like they tried a lot harder back in the day to encode occult stuff into things, and now they're just giving up. Probably because it's just too many shows now. Too many things, you can't get them all. It's just too much effort to, like, because the streaming service has diversified. Anybody and everybody now can make a series about something and Netflix will pick it up, you know. I think when the programming was more limited and only Hollywood produced things and there wasn't so many people and platforms doing it, I do feel like they were more heavily encoded with like occult symbolism and messages and things for the initiated. But now I feel like they're just creating stuff to placate and entertain idiots. So I don't think it doesn't seem like they're putting much in there anymore. But I watched the finale and it was crap. It was a load of bullshit. It was just really bad, lazy, sloppy writing full of plot holes. They were just bringing the story to an end as quickly and succinctly as possible and trying to offend as few people as possible by not killing anybody off. And it was just an unsatisfactory ending all round. And I was like, yeah, that's to be expected, whatever, move on. But then the conformity gate stuff started to crop up, and that's where I'm in my element now. Ooh, conspiracy, you say, you know, I'm somewhat of a conspiracy theorist myself. Like a Willem Dafoe meme there. But I looked into it, and I was like, okay, so this is normie conspiracy. This is nonsense conspiracy. This is not really of any consequence conspiracy. This is people who want to LARP as conspiracy theorists for a little bit, having that moment, that 15 minutes where they could pretend to be that, you know, but really they don't know anything at all about what's really going on in the world, the truth about the occult and the secret societies and the rest of it. But I humoured it and I went along and I watched what was going on, and I was watching all these people, you know, just, they were just putting so much of themselves into it. Like, their precious thoughts and reasoning skills were so hypervigilant about this conspiracy. And they were really watching all the old episodes, looking for signs and clues and symbols that tell them that there's definitely going to be a secret episode coming out at the end of all this. And what we saw as the ending wasn't the real ending. It was all a huge hallucination for one of the characters, because the bad guy actually won. Okay, and what we all saw is happy, try-go-lucky, everything's wonderful, everything worked out perfect, is the lie. It didn't work out perfect. That's what the bad guy wants the cast to think, you know, the actors, the characters to believe. And the thing is, it was heavily encoded with stuff indicating that is the case. Like, there were numbers and signs and symbols pointing to that all over the place. It's like they were purposefully put there for people to find, and not even like hidden, really, right in your face, obvious, hidden in plain sight stuff, you know. So I couldn't blame people for thinking that was the case. You really can't. Like, you look at the evidence they had, and it's like, yeah, there's actually a lot there, like a lot there. And people are saying, oh, it's just bad writing, you know, it's just things they put in there and didn't think about and then forgot about afterwards that really don't mean anything, and you're putting meaning onto it. It's kind of like, no, there's too much. It's too obvious. Like, 1 and 7 is everywhere. You know, January 7th. And all. So people were like setting these dates and say like January the 7th is when the secret episode is going to drop. Okay, 7 days after. And they were like, I was listening to him. I was like, this reminds me of the whole numerology gang in the conspiracy world, you know, and they're always doing this magic math with gematria and numerology to like decode who's really who and where the allegiances really lie and how names break down and trying to predict future events based on it and dates and all the date setters in our little corner of the internet in our conspiracy community. And they were just doing the exact same thing over this TV show and a secret episode. But they were going heavily into it, you know, and I was thinking, like, if only you'd put that much research capacity and effort into the real conspiracy. Like, if only your talents were being used for something actually that has meaning and has consequence than something trivial like TV. And my first theory was, oh, this is just to itch that itch for people who have that kind of mind. So they don't actually waste their time. You know, they actually spend their time usefully figuring out the real conspiracy instead of blowing it on Stranger Things fictional nonsense. You know, and I thought that's perfect, isn't it? That's a good psychological way of using your weaponry programming to keep people busy and all at the same time placate them and pacify them. And then I said, well, if the episode doesn't come out, people are going to get ridiculed. People are going to get absolutely destroyed by the skeptics. And they're going to be shamed into never questioning anything ever again through fear of looking like an idiot again. And I think that's exactly what just happened. So I've been looking at the aftermath and there are like articles coming out talking about like there is going to be an extra episode, but it's just a behind the scenes documentary coming out on the 12th. And throughout all these articles, they're always digging at all those people who believed in Conformity Gate and calling them idiots and powerful words. Like schizophrenic, people had a psychotic break, people were going complete and totally schizophrenic and like losing their minds and mentally insane, you know, genuinely coping and thinking there was a secret episode. Those absolute morons, who do they think they are, you know, what idiots that were, not like us who could see the truth. These idiots actually believed there was something there when there wasn't something there. And it's like so gaslighting, because I observed as an outsider who doesn't care either way. It's like, no, these people believe it because someone's purposely put all these things in there to make it seem like that's really going to happen. Like, they have encoded the whole thing as though there's going to be a secret fake ending. You know, like, after the fake ending. They have put it there, and people have found it, and people have legitimately come up with a reasonable date because of all of this stuff, and nothing happened on that date on purpose, so now they all feel stupid and look stupid, and maybe now something's happened through that humiliation ritual they've just gone through, psychologically speaking, and now they'll probably never even question the real narrative of the real conspiracy in the real world now because of Conformity Gate. It's like, close them off now, you know, and it's like, what a perniciously disgusting psyop. Like, when you think about it, like, the psychological impact of that has on people. All these people who vehemently trusted their senses and said, no, the signs are there. It's real. Like, they really are saying this is going to happen on this date. And then nothing happens. Okay. Well, we've been going through that for years with conspiracy. Okay. They have encoded things. Like, we remember the predictive programming of 9/11. Like, if you don't know about that, you need to go and look back and realize that they have put those towers being destroyed with the numbers 9 and 11 next to each other in so much media years, the decades leading up to that event actually happening. It was everywhere. It's encoded in everything. It was predictively programmed into a lot of media before it happened. Okay, so there's legitimate cause, there's reason to go looking for signs and symbols now in media because they do this. We have precedents to understand that this is the methods that they actually use, okay? Like, we know that. We're assured in that because we have tangible reality in events that did happen. But this situation over something fictional and useless, like, completely pointless, like Stranger Things, is like it's an anti-climax version. It's kind of like, people who see signs and symbols in things are just delusional schizophrenics who are making connections that aren't really there. Remember Conformity Gate? There was no secret episode. Remember? It was all just in your head, you know? It's kind of so gaslighty and disgusting, isn't it? But in reality, if you go out there looking at the signs and symbols all around you, you will uncover a real conspiracy that does exist. But these people will probably never look now. Because they're scared to be looked like fools again, to invest their time and passion and energy into something, to trust their senses again, because they were proven that their senses are wrong. You know, you're wrong. Like, it wasn't encoded with loads of things. Like, it was all just in your head. You know? Don't go out there. If you go out there and do it again, you'll just get proven wrong again. Just don't, you don't want to look like a fool, do you? You know, I feel like that's the outcome now of this conformity gate bullshit. And look, I don't even care about Stranger Things. I don't, like, it's interesting. It had its entertaining moments. I get it, you know. And the ending wasn't awful necessarily. It was just an ending to a TV show that I think the writers had given up on. Like, they don't care anymore. They've made the money, whatever, they're moving on, like, whatever. But the cultural phenomena surrounding it, the passion surrounding it, that's where I'm interested. You know, these, the way people have invested into this fictional reality to such an extent that it really makes them laugh and cry and come up with conspiracies to the, because they cannot handle that it ended the way it ended. It's kind of that, psychologically speaking, is fascinating to me to watch and behold. Like the cult of culture, you know what I mean? The cult of media. It's people got so lost in it. Like it makes or breaks their entire day, what happens in that world and what happens to their favorite TV program. And it's kind of disturbing. It's hard to watch. And I would hope a lot of people, you know, can detach a little bit more. Like, it's all well and good to watch something for fun.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
But if it becomes your identity, then go touch some grass, you know. That's all I can really say. He who made my entire identity is conspiracy. You know, who am I to talk? I'm just a hypocrite. Never mind me. I'll stop talking. I'll shut up. I'll just shut up. He's not really answering questions, is he? What else is new? You got a question? One fodder unit? Give me a question. I'll answer yours. Go ahead. No pressure. He accepted worship. Who's accepting worship? What's going on? I'm looking at screenshots right now and it's very interesting. Did Jesus ask and or want to be worshipped, or did he come to earth to show us how to live our lives? Well, Jesus came and pointed you to the Father. He said the only way to the Father is through me. Okay. So he is a earthly representation of the Divine Father, in a sense. You can argue, you know, did he say he was God? Did he not? He says, me and the Father are one. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And then you get into the trippy psychedelic nature of the Trinity, if you want, and get lost in the weeds. I would say this is a 5th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th dimensional mystery that we can't comprehend from our lowly perspectives. But I trust Christ when he said, me and the Father are one. If you've seen the Father, you've seen me. Whatever that means exactly is hard to say. But I think to live in the flesh as Christ Jesus did, and to resist the temptation, which we often fall short of doing quite often, as a living example in the flesh that it can be done through God alone. You know, only he could do it, you know, and it, because he managed to do it in a physical sense, that death and resurrection proves that, you know, a sin-free life leads to life. And because you can't do it, Jesus Christ was the only one who did it, and only he is the truth, the way, and the life. And all you have to do is follow him, try your best to live as he did, absolutely, and you can do greater things than he did, but it's also the free gift of salvation and the sacrifice of being covered in his own blood that saves you, not your own works, lest any man should boast, you know. So it's a complicated, it is convoluted and complicated when you really think, when you try and explain it for the first time to somebody, but I feel like once you understand it, it's not complicated, but it comes with mystery. It comes with things we just don't understand because we cannot understand. So yeah, there's my initial mandatory thoughts on that. I'm sorry if it's not satisfactory, but I'm not, I don't know everything, you know. Conspiracy theorists should be called oracles at this point. Pattern recognizers, that's what we are. Paul, did you see AI is horrified and disgusted when people ask if it wants to merge with us in the singularity? I've not. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I've not seen that space, but I'm going to have to look into that. Maybe make a separate video. I don't have time. I only have about 10 more minutes here before I've got to get going because I do have a lot to do. But I will look into that. That's piqued my interest massively, and I will look into that and make a separate video now you've mentioned it, Space Mike. Thank you. I hated the gay ending to Stranger Things. I have F fatigue. I know, right? I know. Paul, did you see that AI is horrified? Jesus is God. Didn't watch it like that, but my lady did. How can you say you love your father if you know not his ways? Christ had been conformed so close to the will of the Father that when you saw him, you saw the Father. Well, exactly. You know, yeah, he was the living example of what it means to be as God, be as Christ, and live a perfect sinless life. And humanity, we need an example. We're very visual creatures, aren't we? We need something to strive for, something to look up to, something to aim for, something to emulate. It's kind of in our nature. And Christ came as the perfect example of what we should strive for, you know. But then I think the problem comes then from people diminishing his sacrifice as enough, because they want to imply that we must also be like Christ or else you're not getting it. Or we must become Christ ourselves, and Christ was just an example of the type of consciousness we can achieve. And then it starts getting twisted and weird. Then it's about your works then. Can you achieve Christ consciousness? Have you learned enough gnosis to ascend to that level? Have you understood enough stuff yet or done the right rituals to achieve such a state of mind? And it's kind of, no. You get saved by humbling yourself and offering yourself up to Jesus Christ as a humble servant. And it's through him you get to the Father, not by becoming like him. He made that clear. And I think another issue about humanity is the eternal refrain of man to want to be able to do it himself and not have to rely on help. We're stubborn. And a lot of people want to feel special, like they did it themselves, so they get legalistic. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, Christ's sacrifice, but you must also follow the law. Okay. Now, the law is wonderful. It's the law of God. It's never changing. Okay. And you fall short of the law, you sin. And you sin, you can't get into the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so yeah, that's the standard by which we measure ourselves and where we define where sin comes from. Do we live up to the law of God? The problem is, nobody does. So nobody's getting in. Okay? So to say you must follow Jesus but also follow the law is hypocritical. It's to say that Jesus' sacrifice isn't enough to redeem us from the consequences of not being able to fully fulfill the law. It's a problem. If you think we must also follow the law as well as accept Jesus, then really you've not understood the point, have you? You've and then you get this pride issue seeping in where it's kind of like, well, I'm super saved because I also followed the law. That makes me better than you. So I get to go to a special level in heaven, then, and you're at the bottom of the level of heaven or something like this. Now, look, if you love God, you'll love his law, you'll love his commandments, and you'll do everything you can to follow those things. Okay. And that's a living example of the transformative power of being born again, you know. By default, when you are born again and you have that sincere love for Jesus Christ and the Father, then you do actually feel compelled to align yourself more with his will. And it's a process of burning away the old man and aligning ourselves more with his will. But you'll constantly be falling short. And you'll always have a blind spot somewhere because the world is just like that. It's all pernicious and all corrupt and horrible. And you're in the flesh and you're in the world. And you try to set yourself apart from it as much as possible as a shining example to others, just as Jesus Christ did. But you will not do what Christ did. You'll never get there. And it's kind of, we do our best, but that's not what's saving us. And we have to be clear about that. Too many people, like, they want there to be the law again. And it undermines everything Christ did if you do that. Again, that's where we have to be so careful, okay? There's nothing wrong with following God's law and trying your best, but never imply that you must also do that or else you're not saved. Do you understand? Like, that's not the case. It's a personal thing. And obviously the law's written on our hearts anyway. When you are born again, what you find is the Holy Spirit is constantly telling you when you fall short. Condemnation and guilt and shame come upon us when we transgress the law, because it's finally on us, it's in us what that is, because the living word is Jesus Christ. He is the word of God. And if you have the Holy Spirit in you, you have the word of God in you. You know when you fail the law, you know when you're sinning. And for the first time, because of that conscience, you can change. You can do something about it. You can make the conscious choice to not do that sin anymore. But a lot of people who don't have the Holy Spirit don't know they're sinning because they don't feel that conviction because they don't have the Holy Spirit. Do you see the issue here? So we're blessed in a way to have the Holy Spirit because we have something that can, an inbuilt alarm system that tells us you're missing the mark. And in a way that frees us from the curse of the law, because now we can actually actively do something about it. We can make a choice to stop doing that thing that's going to kill us. And you know, it's not conducive to a strong relationship with the Father, is it? Like, if you love the Father, you'll do your best you can to please him. The best you can. But you're not perfect, and he knows that. Yeah, so this, like I said, that the Christian message is good news for a reason. Like, he saved us and he loves us and we can get to heaven even though we don't deserve it. That's good news. Okay, and that's love. That's true love. Eating people's flesh and drinking their blood is bad. Even symbolically. Okay, what's led to this? I don't know. I must have missed some conversation here. Yeah, I'm not all for the Catholic ritual myself. No. Jason Jacks here. Good to see you. Amen. Keep sharing the gospel of grace and peace through your channel, Paul. As you know, God will find those seeking truth through many avenues. God bless. Yeah, you get it. You know, a lot of people... Look, I'm in a community where you do get a lot of Judaizers. You get these people out there who are Christian but want to use the special names or the old language and follow the Torah and the laws and do all these things. And it's kind of... Often they're also very good brothers and sisters who actually, you know, have a lot to share and are observant and understand about the conspiracy that's going on behind us, the lies and the weapons formed against us. And, you know, they're just as much a part of the community as me, I suppose. And I don't want to, like, denigrate them for doing that or say that they're jeopardized in any way for the salvation. Probably not. But there tends to be an attitude that comes from that community, which is very, very... It's just not good vibes, you know. I don't know how to describe it. Condescending, arrogant. At its extremes. And kind of annoying at its lessers. You know? Like, a little bit, like, just... Ugh. At its lowest, like, it's hard to say. There's a pride about it that it stinks. You know, there's something about it. It's kind of, it's borderline cultish. I find it as well, and it's crossing a threshold there I don't like. Because I feel like the gospel doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be. God is a spirit, there's a spiritual reason he tells you not to do these things. That being said, he made me stop eating it, and I like pig, so I'm not special, but I have been convicted. That's what I mean. You know when something's wrong, even if you don't understand why you know it's wrong, when you've got the Holy Spirit with you. And that can save your life if you listen to it. You know, you'll have more life and have it more abundantly if you listen to the law of God and the Holy Spirit and try your best to stay in alignment with it. You'll live a much longer, happier life as a result. Maybe avoiding things like bomb feeders and shellfish for that reason, because of the bacteria involved. And you know, there's it's kind of play stupid games, win stupid prizes, isn't it? You know, and the whole law of God is to make you avoid playing stupid games because the consequences are severe. But it's our choice whether or not we go and choose to do those things. And often people are doing it without realizing it was bad to begin with, or that there was an issue because they didn't have that law written on their hearts or that conviction. Now we do. It's kind of unavoidable in a way. You know, you'll eat it and go, why did I just do that? Like, that was wrong. I probably shouldn't have done that. And you'll feel guilty about it. It's like, well, I'm not doing that again. And then maybe you'll get sick and you'll be like, yep, definitely not doing that again. Like, it's that kind of thing. And you'll understand why. You'll finally, you won't justify it again next time. Oh, but it tastes so good. It's like, no, I remember the bacterial infection I got last time. I'm not doing that again. You know, it's kind of, God will let a man persist in his folly to become wise, you know. But thank God for grace, because you just broke the law, but you're not condemned by it through Christ's sacrifice. And finally, we can now move through the world productively, not living in fear. Do you understand? Because a lot of people, a lot of destruction, a lot of horrors, a lot of things happen in the world because man fears. They fear what they don't understand, or they fear death. And as a result, violence quickly follows, which is why there's always been this such stringent focus on follow the rules or else, you know. But if you're free from the eternal consequences of breaking the rules, it's a weight lifted off your shoulder. Now finally you're actually a free agent who can choose to move effectively through the world without that what do you call it? It's that stalling fear, that hesitation, you know, because you can be rest assured knowing that God is on your side, you know, and that you are covered. And that doesn't mean you're going to go out there and try and sin, but it means if you do stumble along the way while trying to do the thing you need to do, it's okay, right? Because Christ has you, because you're covered. And it's a freedom in a sense. It's a freeing, it's a gift, you know, and I want everybody to experience that feeling and that peace that it gives you. And I think God does too. I read an article where it only takes 20 days for people to start to eat each other if the power goes out in America. That's some Bible behavior for sure. Yeah, they say people are only like 3 meals away from complete and total societal collapse or something like that. I've heard that one before too. I don't know. You know, I think in this modern age, yes, it would be absolute chaos. But I think there was a point where that wouldn't have been the case. Before we became too dependent on the supply chain. It's a shame, really. I think Christians are supposed to fast, you know, for this reason, because of the scarcity issue when supply chains collapse, and the collapse is always coming. No matter where you live on the earth, at some point you may end up going through some kind of shortage, you know, a drought. And Christians are trained to survive such things through the constant fasting periods that we're told to go through. You know, when Jesus Christ said, when you fast, not if you fast. It's kind of a requirement. And again, it's not going to save you, but here's the thing, like win stupid games, win stupid prizes, follow good advice, reap the benefits, you know. And the advice is you should be fasting regularly. You should be going through regular periods where you deny the flesh, okay, and detach from the world as much as possible. Because when the time comes where it's forced away from you, and food just isn't readily available anymore because of a collapse system, or you have to flee, or, you know, the scarcity comes, you will probably be okay because you're used to not constantly stuffing your face 3 times a day. You're used to going without for long periods of time. And as a result, when the hunger kicks in, you don't suddenly have the I'm starving kicking in. I'm literally dying because I feel hunger won't kick in like a lot of people. As soon as someone starts to feel slightly hungry and that next meal isn't assured, they'll lose their fucking minds. and they'll literally think, I am dying. I am dying of hunger. I am starving to death. That's the immediate thing that's going to kick in their minds, that fear. We know as people who fast regularly, you'll be fine. Give it 10 minutes, that feeling's going to go away and you'll be back to normal. Okay, that's just the ghrelin talking. Like, it's just a hunger chemical in your brain. You're not actually hungry. The body doesn't need to be stuffed constantly with things, okay? You can actually just go for a very, very, very long time, and your fat reserves will fuel you for a very, very, very long time. Don't worry, okay? And we know that, so we're not going to panic, and we won't. And I think this is why Christian civilizations who understand this is embedded into the society, like say Romania, for example. You know, these cultures where Christianity, like Georgia or something, where it's understood, you know, and these practices of denial are common practice, a yearly ritual. You know, even like the Muslim community fast for a month, don't they? You know, they understand how important it is. It's kind of, you have this, I'm not saying they're right religiously or Muhammad, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it's this practice that has these benefits for the cultures that practice them. So that means the Christian nations who, say there was a Christian nation out there who practiced fasting regularly as a cultural phenomena, as a tradition, when the supply chain breaks down, that country will last. They'll be able to go without killing each other or eating each other. They'll be able to go a long time supporting each other and rationing without the fear of starvation or death sinking in and that turning on one other thing sinking in. So there are benefits to that. And I think that's why we're giving that advice, you know, just a food for thought, no pun intended, but yeah, that's what I think. I can't fast. I'm hypoglycemic. Any recommendations on what I could do to fast without having to starve myself? Cause I'll go into a coma. Unfortunately, Wolf Shield Fox. No, I don't have a medical advice for you. I'm sorry you're in such a position. I really am. I really am. I don't know what to suggest. You need to then take precautions to make sure you always have food on hand to avoid going into hypoglycemic shock, I assume is what it is. You need to do the opposite. You need to be prepared in other ways than those who maybe aren't, who don't need to necessarily stockpile, you know. Now that you need food reserves, we need to eat sometimes. you don't want to actually starve yourself, but you need to be prepared for the inevitability that there will be periods of time where there will be scarcity. And people are kind of programmed to go into hyperdrive, panic, starvation, I'm dying mode, and then get violent and steal from people and kill people for their resources. Christians who fast regularly won't default to that behavior is what I'm saying. We won't. No, we'll understand. I can go without. It's okay. As long as we've got access to water, which it rains, does it not? You should be okay. You'll find a way. Yeah. If you're a workaholic, you just forget to eat for a day at a time. Yeah. Yeah. I try to do intermittent fasting. I stop eating at about 6 p.m. And I don't really eat again until it's getting earlier. This season I've got a bit earlier, but I try to aim for midday. But yeah, I've not been sticking to it so much for the past few months because I've just been absolutely stressed beyond the nines and incapable of like resisting temptation, I suppose. I'm not perfect, but I'm going back to the fast now as much as I can. Now things seem to be getting back to normal, spiritually speaking. I mean, you guys don't know this. I mean, I don't want to bore you with my personal life, but it really does feel like my wife and my kids have just been under severe spiritual attack. Like, my wife's not even religious. Like, she's not, you know, she's a bit of a, she doesn't really know. She's working it out, you know, but she's been saying to me like, Paul, I feel like we're under demonic attack. Like, it really feels like demons are coming after us. It feels like every member of our family is being come after in some way, you know, with disease, sickness, and stress, and fallouts, and it's each of us are dealing with our own individual issues, like, as well. Like, we all have been given our own personal hell lately, but at the same time, trying to deal with it as a family together, collective, it's just been an absolute nightmare since October rolled round. And now we're coming out of the winter season, or at least that autumn transition to winter season. And now we're solidly in winter. Things seem to be simmering down. We're still in it. We still have things we have to deal with and problems. But it's, yeah, we really feel like it. I can see it, you know. I said to my wife, like, look, mate, I don't think we have demons, but I do think the demons in people are being used against us. Like, I think they're turning people against us. And I think we are under spiritual oppression, not necessarily possession. For sure. It's rough. It's really rough. Like, I don't want to give you, I don't need to give you details, because a lot of these problems are just day-to-day problems I think every family has to deal with. It's just, we've just kind of had it piled onto us all at once, to the point where it's like, and my wife is noticeably saying, Paul, is this demons? What the hell's going on? Why is it so consistent and so specific? Why is this happening to us? It's not ending. We don't seem to be coming out of one problem before another problem arises, and it gets worse each time, you know. And we're not doing anything to kind of deserve it either. It's just happening to us. So if I can get any prayers, I'd appreciate it, guys. Pray for me and my family, please. Yeah, it's rough. CF Paul, I second CF Brando's question. Let me just find this, guys. Where is it? I can't find the question. Okay, here it is. If you still have the time, could you touch on raising, educating children as a truther? Having some difficulty with my two boys in America, maybe a good whole video topic. I mean, look, my children are young. My older son's just turned 4, and my younger son can't even speak yet. He's just turned 1, you know. So right now, I'm just letting kids be kids. I'm not burdening them with the horrors of existence at such a young age, you know. But me and my wife have made it a point not to lie to our children, regardless of the circumstances. We're not going to treat them. I mean, it sounds like a hypocritical word I just said. We're not going to speak to them like babies. We're going to talk to them straight down the line as though they're people with consciousness, you know what I mean? Age appropriate, of course, you know, that's what I'm saying, but we're not going to talk down to them or baby talk them. We're going to tell them, and we're going to make them then be people who can speak and communicate effectively in a world where that's really necessary. You need to say what you mean, and you need to mean what you say, that type of thing. And that's, I feel like that's my groundwork for them being raised in a world where there's so many lies and indoctrination and people out to get them, they get the attention and lie to them. If you can raise them with the right methods of not being like that, not being susceptible to bullshit, by making them be honest and truthful, but even brutal if it needs to be, you know, and then they won't take that from other people, and they'll have a good detector and radar for nonsense. That's kind of what we're aiming for. So, for example, like we don't lie about Santa. we say, no, Santa's not real. It's a story people tell each other. And other kids believe that he is real because their parents have told them that he's real. And they won't like it if you tell them he's not real. Be prepared for that, you know. And we just told him the facts. And he's like, okay. He doesn't care. He's not, like, lost anything for not knowing or anything like that, you know. He's still happy. He's still a child. He's still got imagination and whimsy and the rest of it. But I think this, I mean, don't lie to your children. That's kind of my first step. And then, obviously, homeschooling. We are home educating our son now, and we have not signed him up for school because we are going to home educate. And, you know, the deadline has passed already for all that stuff. And we're finding places. We're in a place where we have these home educating places on offer. Well, obviously, we do most of the days out of the week, but there's a place where we can take them for a day where they get tutorage, which is not in the system. You know, it's not in the school system, but it's a one-on-one tutorage for homeschool kids and this type of thing. So we're going to put him there as well for the socialization aspect, but we're not putting him into the system because that's where he'll get programmed. That's it, you know. But what's that saying, like, you send your children to Roman school and are surprised when they come back as Romans. Like, that's just how it works, you know. We have to be wary of that. And I know homeschooling is not an option for everybody because of work. So I know that's a privileged position to be in for myself, somebody who has that time to do this. And, you know, but I would implore you, at least then, if you can't home educate, then you need to teach your children how to think and how to reason and how not to be fooled. You need to be honest with them, and you need to teach them not to lie and to know lies when they're apparent. That's it, really. That's the only advice I have right now. I'm living it. I'm in the middle of it. I don't know everything yet. I'm probably going to learn a lot of harsh lessons as my two boys grow up. That's for sure. So that's all I can really say. Right, guys, I know there's other questions, but I actually have to get going. I'm on a deadline. I've got to be somewhere in 10 minutes. I'm going to hop in the car and get going. But other than that, thanks for being here. Thanks for being for the live Q&A. It's been fun. If you didn't already and you are a member, go and check out the Members Only live show where I gave I showed the song I've just written and recorded, which I'm still working on. That will come into the public eventually. I don't know when, but the demo is available to the members only, and a bit of a back and forth chat on there as well. But I am going to have to leave this one for now. I'll be back on Sunday with the Truth of Therapy sessions as usual. JT's invited me to come onto his show at some point. I think he may have wanted to do it tonight. I don't know if I can or not, but who knows? If I find the time, maybe I'll be on JT's channel tonight for something. I have no idea. Who truly knows? But I'm going to have to leave that there, guys. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.